Hi everyone.
Office.
Well, it's my real pleasure to introduce Sabrina Rashid. She is a PhD candidate at Carnegie Mellon University, working with Ziv Bar-Joseph. And she spent the summer looking at applying deep learning to single-cell data, in particular using, as she'll say, using variational autoencoders to try to understand the heterogeneity of tumors from single-cell data. Look forward to hearing what she has to say. Thank you.
Hi everyone. As Rohit mentioned, I'm Sabrina, a finishing third year PhD student at Carnegie Mellon University at Computational Biology Department. So in this summer intern project, we looked into single cell tumor data, and we know tumor comes from very heterogeneous landscape. So we wanted to find what are the can we identify the underlying heterogeneity from that single cell data. So this is a brief outline of the talk, motivation, method, and then results and discussion. So next, first, motivation. As I mentioned, intra-tumor heterogeneity means is very one of the challenging things when you want to decipher tumor evolution for a subject. So what happens is that malignant cells, even if they're coming from a single tumor, they'll have a very distinct genomic profile. So in terms of their gene expression values or copy number profile or mutations, like each cell will have something different. So earlier, when people use sequencing, they used to do bulk sequencing, where you actually pull a bunch of cells together and then sequence all the cells together, not like at an individual level. So what happens is that when you do bulk sequencing of such tumors, it actually averages out their genomic profile, so you lose their heterogeneity information. So next came single cell sequencing, which is very important if you want to unmask what are the underlying heterogeneity or difference of these different malignant cells. But then single cell data comes with its own sets of computational challenges. Since we are sequencing at single cell, so the quantity that you are sequencing is very little. So the data is actually very noisy and sparse. By sparse, I mean there will be a lot of genes that are in low quantity, so it will not be detected in many cells. So hence, even though it's expressed in a low level, it will be a completely zero in many cells. So that there will be dropout and sparse. So it becomes very hard to to extract meaningful biologically meaningful features. So that is the expression data. Then again comes the copy numbers and mutation data from DNA sequencing. So to estimate to have high fidelity estimation of mutation and copy number profiles at a single cell level, you need very high depth sequencing. So which is not always possible. Even if it's possible, you'll only be able to sequence only a couple of cells, not a large cohort to make your to analyze the data. So here we are using a variational autoencoder to learn a latent representation of the single cell data that is coherent with the underlying biology and also generalized enough to the different types of genomic data. Different types, I mean RNA-seq expression data and also copy number data from DNA sequencing. So we know autoencoders are these multilayered perceptron neural networks that learn their own definition of the data in a completely unsupervised manner. But in variational autoencoder, the concept of this unsupervised deep learning is merged with of the Bayesian inference, where you actually, instead of generating an unconstrained representation of the data, we assume that the latent representation is actually coming from an underlying distribution. If you think about it, it's like how scientists observe nature. You observe a natural phenomena and you want to know what is the underlying law that is governing them. So it's kind of like that. We want to learn a representation. Instead of learning unconstrained representation, we want to learn actually the distribution that the latent representation is coming from. So here, this is the structure of the autoencoder. So you have the first input layer is the number of genes, and then we have three intermediate layers, and then the last, the latent layer. So how many nodes in each layer and how many layers you want, that can be user parameter for the package. So for the results that I'll show, I have used three latent dimension and that particular layer. So here, instead of actually encoding the latent representation Z directly, we are actually encoding for the sample mean and sample variance, and we're learning the distribution given the input data. Once we have that, we can sample Z from that learned probabilistic. So it is kind of giving you a probabilistic encoding of the input data space. And then there's a complementary decoder network. When we learn the structure, we learn it as a whole, like encoding and decoding, but we are actually, where we're learning the parameters of the model, but we are actually interested in the latent representation at this three-dimensional latent representation of the data. So that is a brief overview of the algorithm that we are using. So we have actually had three types of data sets that we have tested our method. One, first, gene expression data sets. We have three different single-cell RNA-seq gene expression data. First one is with over 4,000 cells, second one over 6,000 cells, and the last one over 2,000, and all of them has like 23K genes. Then we have two copy number data sets from DNA sequencing data. These two are actually xenographed samples. And first sample has 260, and the second sample has 254 cells. These two xenographed samples are sequenced at a very low depth, so 0.05x. And we can see that even with this very low depth copy number estimation, we can still get some biological meaningful output from the data. And then last, we wanted to quantify our performance of our proposed method with some other existing techniques. So that's why, for that, we have used a synthetic gene expression data set where we know actually how many clusters are in there and can compute some quantitative metric to analyze the methods. So first, the oligodendroglioma data set, where the data set contains a mixture of malignant and non-malignant cells. So upon we pass the data through our autoencoder, we can see there is a clear separation between the malignant and the non-malignant microglia or macrophage cells. Next, we wanted to see our goal was to unmask tumor heterogeneity. So we wanted to investigate more the malignant cells. So next, we pass the malignant cells, the relative expression of the malignant cells only to the autoencoder, and we get these nice structures. So we are getting a bifurcation-like structure, like a V-like structure, where you see that cells are put on two different types of cells are coming out, and they are put on the two different arms of the V structure. So the first one, here, the data that the paper originally reported, they also computed differentiation and lineage metric for each of the cells based on a set of signature genes and the set of control genes. So to show that the two different types of cells are indeed put on the two different arms, we have actually colored our scatter plot using their metric. Like the first one is the lineage score, which shows which cells are oligo-like and which cells are astro-like. Like these are the two different cell types that are present in the data. And we see a nice separation. And then we also have the differentiation metric, that is which cells are further differentiated and which cells are in more stem-like. So we do see so looking at the structure, we thought the more stem-like cells should be near the neck of the bifurcation, and we do see that the more stem-like cells are indeed put in this site. So this actually shows how the autoencoder, without using the prior knowledge, we are actually fishing out what are the underlying tumor heterogeneity and how these two populations are related to each other. It's actually showing that even though there are two different types, cell types present, they're actually coming from the same lineage. So this is with the signature genes only. Next, we wanted to see whether we can find same kind of structure without using any signature, just automatically selecting some cells based on maybe coefficient of variation or average expression level or something. So this is based on average expression level with top 5,000 genes, 5,000 auto-selected genes, and we can still see that it gives a good separation of the two different types of cell population. Next, we wanted to compare with other methods, whether they can capture the same truth or not. So the first one is the TSNE. TSNE is really popular now to do reduced dimension high dimensional data, and has been used in many single cell processing and RNA-seq processing datasets. But here, what TSNE does, it does show a separation, but it is showing the separation of different samples that the tumors are coming from. But it's not actually capturing what is the state of the each cell. Like, it's not showing any distinct differentiation between the two types of cells. Then again, we have the PCA. So PCA can show like somewhat separation, but it's not. The structure is not as distinct as we have for our autoencoder. So next dataset is astrocytoma with over 6,000 cells. Here again, we see clear separation of the malignant in figure A, malignant and non-malignant cells. And then again, we passed only the malignant relative expressions through the autoencoders. And for this particular dataset, the authors didn't compute like the matrix that we had for the earlier dataset. So to know like of what we are getting at, I plotted it on top of the matrix from the previous datasets. So the solid dots actually from the previous datasets and marked with the differentiation score. And we do see that most of the astrocytoma the malignant astrocytoma cells are actually falling in the stem-like region. So when I went back to the original paper to see whether it makes sense or not, we see that they do mention the most of the cells in that data set is actually in a more intermediate states. So it's actually accurately capturing that their statement as well. So this is another data set, which is the leukemia data set. And here we see a separation of cell lines, K562 cell line and the other cells, but we're not seeing a distinct separation based on the BCR-A. So these are gene mutation status of each cell. So we're not seeing a distinct separation between these status, but we do see a blunt V-like structure. Probably it is catching something else like that is common to all these type of cells. So it needs this particular validation is actually needs more biological analysis to see what we see a trajectory, but what are we actually seeing biologically, how relevant it is. It needs further work. I just wanted to show the plot of this result. So next we analyze synthetic data sets. So in the synthetic data set, we have 500 cells. For each cell, we have 3,000 genes, and cells are coming from five different clusters. So each cluster will have 100 cells. For this particular one, there is actually 2.5K cells that are actually representative of the cluster and 500 noisy cells. When we pass it through the autoencoder, we see a very good separation of the five clusters, and when we estimate the number of clusters using a Gaussian mixture model, we can see that the autoencoder actually correctly predicts there are five clusters, which none of the other ones do. TSNE does like capture three, but the PCA is only one. And also we computed the adjusted random index for all of the cases, and we see that we have the maximum 0.98 for our autoencoder compared to the other two. Next, we increased the amount of noisy genes to 2,500 out of 3,000, so only 500 genes are actually signal of the actual clusters. And here, the autoencoder is actually picking up four clusters, but still with a much better adjusted random index score than compared to the rest of one. So you can see PCA is just a blob. TSNE is some separation between two, but not so much. So their score is really low. Then we also did some comparison. So I showed you what autoencoder structure we used in our paper. And then we tried to see whether we can if we remove some of the intermediate layers, how does it affect? It does get faster, but not by it's not by much. So it's 3.43, and I would say it's not that expensive as a runtime. But we do get a very better ARI compared to the other structures. And also both of the structures are faster than TSNE, and TSNE has lower metric. Next result that I'm gonna show is the copy number. So this is DNA sequencing data. So the earlier ones were RNA sequencing data. So this is a DNA sequencing data, which I'm showing the two samples on top of, superimposed on each other. So both are xenograft breast tumor samples. You can consider xenograft 4 as a later time point of xenograft 3. What we can see here is that in xenograft 3, there are two different clusters that are like one major clusters and one minor cluster of the cells. And when you progress after some treatment, when you progress to the later time point at xenograft 4, the minor cluster actually vanishes. So upon projecting in that space, you can clearly see that which cluster. So once we know that, we can actually study those cells, which properties made those cells not progress into the next time points, but the major clusters. And we can see also from what is the biological relevance of these clusters. You see, this is the copy number profile of the xenograft 3 samples, where you see that there is a small cluster of cells that has like twice the copy number in this chromosome compared to the rest of the cells. So that is actually what is captured in the small cluster here. So this group of cells are actually not progressing to the next time point. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the slide, one of the key problem of single cell data is dropout. So it means like some of the genes will not have any signal in many of the cells. So we wanted to see how robust the autoencoder representation is compared to the dropout events. So for that, we have used the synthetic data with 2.5K noisy genes out of 3,000 genes. And we can see that both PCA and TSNE, after increasing the number of dropouts of a couple of percentage, they actually doesn't capture more than one cluster. So they just capture just one cluster. So that's why the ARI score has dropped down to zero even after increasing the percentage of dropout more than 5% or so. But autoencoder is, it is degrading the performance much, but compared to the other two, it's much better. So up until like 10%, we still see close to 0.7. And if we increase the number of dropouts to 50%, like half of the genes are actually dropout, and we see around like 0.3 or 0.4. So it's still differentiating the clusters, maybe not as well as the earlier case, but it's still showing it can identify the clusters and can somewhat make some differentiation. So compared to the other two, it's much better. So to summarize what I have done, we have proposed a new way of extracting useful features with biological significance from single cell data. Nice thing about it is it's completely unsupervised and it requires minimal pre-processing of the data. It's fairly robust to the dropouts, and we have developed a Python package, and that will be distributed as an open source package. In future, so here all the results I have shown as has three latent dimension. I started with three latent dimension just to visualize my results and see, and then I saw that it's actually showing, so I didn't actually go beyond the three dimension later point. But I'm be interested to investigate more latent dimensions, because in the three latent dimensions, we actually can see differentiation between different cell types. But maybe if we go beyond that, maybe some other dimensions will capture some other aspects of the heterogeneity, such as tumor microenvironment or how the cells will respond to treatment response and so on and so forth. And also, I showed you some results that we are seeing that kind of like trajectory or differentiation paths, but it definitely needs more research on what is the biological significance of that structure that we are learning. So for the CML data, I still have to do a lot more on that. And so these are the two immediate main goals of the current work that I want to do. And so some references, and yeah, so that's pretty much my work that I have done in the last 12 weeks, yeah. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Is single cell sequencing still basic research, or has it been used in translational applications? Are people actually using it in the clinic today, or is it really just basic research?
I think at this point it's just basic research. I don't think they're...
I haven't heard of any clinical...
Yeah, I don't think that it's in clinical research, clinical as of yet, yeah.
Gotcha. And are you going to publish a paper on this as well?
I think so, yeah. We have actually finished writing the draft.
Okay.
So just polishing up it and then probably submit it to
great.
Somewhere.
Awesome.
Is it possible to interrogate the transformation into the latent space to learn about the underlying biological model? Or do you have to go kind of the other way, say, here's some factor that we know biologically and this is how it differentiates in the latent space?
So, I don't know like how we can like, so you were asking about like, to investigate the underlying, the structure level of the autoencoder to learn.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of structure in the trajectory or manifolds,
yeah.
or however you want to describe it, in the latent
yeah.
space. Is there a way to like interrogate that structure to learn something about biology? This is sort of to your second future point work. I'm curious
yes.
what your approach is going to be.
Yes. So the immediate one, I think that we're seeing this trajectory or manifold learning, but we can see like how the gene expression levels are progressing in that trajectory and see. Is there any distinct change in the expression level we're seeing, and that maybe that can be insightful biology, and it can probably, so we know about signature genes that is particular to some developmental process or disease process or something, but that, so upon learning that trajectory, that might also point us to new genes that we didn't know that is actually playing a role in this particular process. So after learning that trajectory, maybe we can find more about those kind of genes that were not previously experimentally investigated. So that is one immediate thing that comes to my mind. But then again, yeah. So.
I didn't fully understand some part of it, but So if you have a deeper tree as far as how the cells are evolving and clonality is kind of a bit deeper, it seemed like there were only really two, like what would be the depth of the tree for the data sets that you used as far as the lineage of the cells?
Yeah, so the depth of the tree is actually, the depth of the tree actually comes automatically from the autoencoder projection, so we don't have like any parameters to control like how deep of the tree that will. So some cases that, for example, so here for the expression data, for some of them we see two branch thing, but for some of them we don't. Say for example, here this malignant cells, there is actually one line. So it's not like two distinct cell population. It's just showing a trajectory of one cells like cells. Like developing trajectory or something. Maybe it's not, there is no differentiation. Same goes for this particular astrocytoma data sets. Here, most of the cells are in one particular plot, which is more intermediate, because it's not differentiated well enough. So it's the depth of the tree, it's not that we are controlling, it's what the autoencoder is learning on itself.
How would you change the autoencoder structure to capture a deeper tree? It's presumably in the data, or?
Probably, yeah. So our intuition is that autoencoder, if it's working good, it should be able to, if there is any deeper branching of the cells, it should be able to capture it. So that is our intuition. We haven't tested any data set that had like a deeper, yeah, deeper branching.
So you don't need more latent variables or anything? It's just
so yeah, so we can like, so there's also, we want to investigate more latent variables later to see if our intuition is that different latent dimensions may capture different aspect of the tumor, the cell property. Maybe some cells are coming from a different microenvironment, maybe that is reflected on that or not. So my intuition was something like that. More latent dimensions might capture more tumor cell properties.
Okay.
than we are seeing here.
And things like cell cycle effects, those kind of average out, or they be an issue here?
So one way to account for the cell cycle effects is like, if you exclude the genes that are known for cell cycle, being active for cell cycle. We haven't done anything like, we haven't excluded any genes based on any prior knowledge, so it's including everything here.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Sabrina. Great work.